Please stand by. Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, Software Asset Management on System Z. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn about successful software asset management on System Z and how IBM Tivoli License Compliance Manager for ZOS helps manage costs and license compliance in mainframe environments. One final note, today's call is being recorded. The speaker for today's teleconference is Mike Zelli, IBM Tivoli Product Marketing. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to our speaker, Mike Zelli.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you might be. Welcome to this Software Asset Management on System Z teleconference. I am Mike Zelli. I am the Asset Management Project Manager for the SHARE organization, which is a mainframe users group that helps deal with all sorts of mainframe issues, in particular with what I'm involved with is software asset management. I've been involved in this area for over 10 years, and what I'm going to share with you today are a lot of the key elements that I've picked up over these years from customers, industry experts, and others on some of the things that are really, really important as far as being effective at managing software assets on the System Z environment. So if you flip the charts that are provided with this presentation over to the agenda chart, what I'm going to do, start off at the beginning, is I'm going to talk about why software asset management, what are the main reasons for it, what are the business drivers for it, and so on. Then I'm going to spend some time talking about the discipline of software asset management, some of the issues that relate to that, some of the key elements of software asset management. And then we're going to spend some time talking about the benefits of effective software asset management. And I'm going to go into some specific examples that some IBM customers have been able to achieve. And I'm sure you can relate to your own environments how some of these could be helpful for you. And then I'm going to follow on with some of the key elements of setting up and building a software asset management program. It's not something that's done overnight. It's something that's built up and built upon the successes of each one of the efforts that you would put in place. And then finally, I'm going to conclude with talk about how IBM helps specifically to help you with your software asset management process on System Z. So let's get right into the discussion. Let's move on to the chart of where we talk about why software asset management. And there are really two really key fundamental reasons for even being concerned about software asset management. The first one is, in essence, you may be paying for software you don't use. In other words, you may be wasting your scarce resources in your organization by paying for software that no one is using or using at a very low rate or low volume inside your organization. And that's just an opportunity to be able to save costs for your organization, then redeploy those costs, saved costs, to other projects that you'd like to accomplish in your organization. So that's one of the key elements, is controlling software costs and not wasting funds. But then there's also another issue which is growing importance, and that is that you may be out of compliance with your license agreements. And what's significant about that is that during the normal course of operations, making sure that you're meeting demands of your customers that use this software, you could easily become out of compliance with the licensing terms that your firm has organized or negotiated with software vendors, and therefore be out of compliance. And the implications of that is that you could then owe additional software licensing fees, which then is unexpected, of course, in their budgeting process, and therefore what would be required is then taking limited resources away from existing projects that are planned in order to fund paying those licensing fees. So those are always extremely unfortunate situations that no one wants to be in. And then finally, there's another element to this, the compliance issue, in that with the Sarbanes-Oxley law that was passed a few years back, there are corollary laws throughout the world beyond what's just in the states. And there are also similar transparency laws affecting government operations. And in essence, the spirit of it is that the senior management of all these organizations, whether you're public or private or government, needs to make sure that they're operating within accepted accounting principles and they're basically accounting for their assets appropriately. So what that has meant is that internal audit organizations have been spending a lot more time and focus on making sure that there's, in essence, matching between what organizations have licensed and purchased to what's actually being used or consumed inside the organization. And if there's a gap there, then what's typically happening happens is that there's an audit notice or an audit notification written up about it, and essentially your organization is then given a period of time in order to be in compliance with that. So there are really two fundamental reasons for being interested in software asset management. The first, of course, is to make sure you're deploying and using your software costs appropriately that you spend on software and not wasting funds. And then also the other dimension of making sure that you're in compliance with those licensing terms. So let's move on to the next chart, really talking about the business benefits of software asset management. And as I said, there's some key areas that are involved with that. The compliance risk reduction is that we were just talking about, which fall under really two major categories, the software vendor license audits and then also internal audits that help comply with various regulations that affect your industry or your organization. And then there are a whole series of things that can be done in software cost management. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the clear things that you want to do is to identify and reduce no-use or low-use software in your organization. That's wasted resources that could be spent elsewhere. But then there's the whole implications that are going on about, you know, planning for appropriate capacity upgrades. We've been all going through on ever since we've been involved in the computing world. Hardware has always had increasing capabilities and power in its capacity to process. And since most software contracts are based upon the capacity of the machines that the software runs upon, there is a lot of issues of really thinking through how to upgrade to various software applications and where that might be done. In the System Z environment, a lot of that's being addressed by licensing software on a subcapacity or on the logical partitions. But that's a key element of as you go through and think through your upgrade policies and how you organize your logical partitions, thinking through the software costs and the implications there is a clear benefit of doing effective software asset management. Then there are interesting things that you can do about dealing with competitive replacements, invoice validation, chargeback operations, and so on, which we're going to give into some specific examples further in this talk. And ultimately, the big business value of having an effective software asset management operation and being good at it is that it frees up funds so that you can deploy them on much unneeded projects that your organization would like to do. So that's the ultimate business benefit of having a software asset management program, an effective one on System Z. All right, let's move on to the next chart, talking about the discipline of software asset management. And there's something that you really need to understand, which it took me quite a few years of being in this business to really fully grasp, and that is that software is intellectual property, which is a lot different than what you can think of as what we're all sort of used to as consumers. As consumers, we typically buy things like furniture, appliances, or you know, whatever, and we effectively do with it what we want. For example, you to take the chairs that you're probably sitting on right now, that was probably bought by your organization, and you can basically do with it what you want. And most often, you know, you're just sitting on it doing your work. Well, software is different. Software is intellectual property, and from a legal perspective, the way intellectual property law works is that users or consumers of intellectual property license use rights of that intellectual property. So if we take that chair that I was just talking about, if it was intellectual property, we would have signed a license agreement with the chair manufacturer or the person who owned this, who created this, and say that in essence we've put in terms something to the effect of we are going to use the chair to sit on and perform work or something like that. But if you stood on that chair to change a light bulb, that would be, in essence, if it's not in the term of the agreement, then you would be out of compliance with that agreement. And that's completely different how intellectual property works versus, you know, owning specific products that we're sort of used to. Now, when we translate that over to software, what we're really talking about is what is the license metric or license term that makes sense. So to carry forward, you know, it could be your license to use a particular product for 100 users. Well, if that's a database application or a database tool, what that could mean if it was an internal tool and 100 people within your company were using it, that would be fine. But if that database tool or database application then had access to the Internet, then the definition of a user could be essentially anybody who has access to the Internet. So it's very important to really understand the licensing terms in your contract and what are the use rights that you have with that software contract. And that's really one of the more difficult areas of software asset management, is to really understand what the license uses are and the license metrics are. So be able to really understand that, and then it's a key piece of information that you'll need in order to be able to be effective in software asset management. So let me get into how this comes into effect as to actually be effective in software asset management in the next chart, which is really talking about software asset management having sustained success. If you've been to a Gartner conference on IT asset management or software asset management over the last 5 to 10 years, Gartner will, in various forms, talk about the three key elements of information that you need to have in order to be effective in software asset management. First is an understanding of what you actually have out there, and then also is equally important, you need to understand the usage patterns of that software, where that software is actually being used, where it's being consumed. And then you need to link that information to the contracts, terms and conditions that I was just talking about. I need to understand the license metrics that are in those contracts or those licenses that your company has signed with actually how the software is deployed and then also how it is used. And then, of course, you need to link that information to the financial implications of it so that you can help prioritize and organize the workload that you need to do in software asset management to make sure that you are taking care of and making sure that you are synced up appropriately with the more expensive software and then control it accordingly. Those are all the information elements that are needed to do effective software asset management. And then if you look on the right-hand side of this chart, we want to talk through what we've learned from talking with many, many customers over the years is that, of course, Gartner's perspective is absolutely right on as far as the information elements. But the software asset management is a process, and it needs to be a process that fits within your organization and is successful in the organization. And so there's some key elements that really we can talk through as kind of we've seen as the differences between organizations that are very successful and others that are less so, is really the elements of organizational buy-in. Does your organization buy into the concepts of software asset management and therefore support you in helping you get those things accomplished? And then do you have the right processes in place to help link up all those departments that have an impact on software asset management? Do you have everything kind of, everybody doing their part at the right time to help make sure things are done properly and therefore have a positive result for your organization? And then finally, of course, you need to have the right tools in place that provides you the set of information that you need that is articulated by Gartner's three key elements. So this is, at a very high level, kind of the key elements that are really involved with having a sustained success in software asset management. Well, if we move on to the next chart, really, of why some companies are less successful, this is not an easy task, software asset management, and there are a number of key things that kind of pop out that we've observed why some organizations are more successful than others. And the ones that are less successful, you don't have executive buy-in for software asset management. It's one of the key things that you need in order to help bring together the various departments that have an effect on software asset management. And that's probably a lack of awareness of the potential savings that are out there is clearly one of the reasons why some of the executive buy-in isn't in there. And then there's the issue of software asset management process expertise. In today's world, we're constantly moving around with our job responsibilities and so on, and individuals can have a great understanding of an element of software asset management, but not necessarily have a good understanding of the overall process to have a successful outcome because it requires so much coordination. One of the key elements that we've noticed is that some unsuccessful organizations that they really have poor communications between the technical people, the budget people, the contracts people, and the asset managers in order to be able to pull all that information together and to work effectively together. There's been strong internal conflicts and therefore really preventing effective software asset management. And then ultimately, which is the most important probably element, is that there's little understanding of really communicating the potential benefits of doing software asset management effectively in these organizations. Now, if you move on to the next chart, there's an interesting perspective that Gartner has done to really talk through maturity levels of software asset management. You will find that organizations are range in capabilities, and Gartner's done an interesting job of at various conferences of polling the audience to see how they feel they rank themselves in levels of maturity. And most organizations will rank themselves somewhere between level 2 and level 3. And level 1 is complete chaos, and very few organizations are in total chaos, particularly in System Z. But if you move further up, a lot of organizations are reactive. They react to the next license agreement they need to deal with and so on. And they really don't have all the elements together in a synchronized pattern the way Gartner talks about as far as the key information elements. But there are organizations that do have that and are more proactive. So the general consensus is organizations are between a level 2 and a level 3. But the potential savings are extremely significant if you move further up the capabilities of software asset management. And as we talked to a bit earlier in the talk here, when we start doing system upgrades or system modifications or so on, that's a clear example of really thinking through as you go through and do a capacity upgrade what the implications are from a software asset management perspective. And if you move things appropriately, you can save yourself some significant dollars by licensing on a subcapacity basis, by setting things up appropriately, can have a big impact on future costs. And their costs are cumulative because they continue to be recurring costs over many years. So that gives you a perspective of where organizations are and where the opportunities lie. Now, let's move on to the next chart where we talk about software asset management activities and the benefits of it. This chart is quite simple in that it breaks those elements that we talked about earlier, in that there are really three key elements in order to help organize your thinking about how to approach software asset management and some of the benefits you can achieve. So if we start up on the upper left-hand quadrant, we really talk about, you know, I have a piece of software or some software installed, I actually use it, but I can't find the contract. So there's some definite actions that you can take. It's not that you're necessarily out of compliance. It just means that you need to do some research to find out what's going on. And sometimes you'll find a license contract somewhere else for the licensing of that user's using software and so on. So you can be in good shape there. Or the action is that you don't have it, a contract for it. So your action is either to license the software or deinstall it. From that perspective, there's some clear steps to take. The next level, if you look on the bottom left-hand quadrant, the condition is that I don't have it installed, I don't use it, but I have a contract for it, and I'm paying licensing fees. This is clearly an example of what we call low-hanging fruit, in that this is something that you can terminate that license agreement and thereby save your organization some money. Or it could be a situation where you've actually licensed some software and it never got deployed the way the organization intended it to, and it could be an issue of reactivating a deployment process so that your organization can take advantage of the software capabilities that the software provides. So there are a number of options you can think through with there. Then moving over to the right-hand side on the lower right-hand quadrant, I have it installed, I'm not using it, but I'm contracted for it. So this is a case of software that's dormant, where most likely it's something that's been out there for a while, you've been paying for it over years, but then you find that it's actually not being used by anybody in the organization or any other software program. So therefore, that's again an opportunity to eliminate unnecessary licensing fees. And then finally, in the upper right-hand quadrant, I have it, I use it, I'm contracted for it. Now, this doesn't mean that your software asset management activities are done. There are a lot of opportunities that you can do to help improve the benefits you get from your software. And that is just, first of all, just make sure that the invoices that you get for that software is valid relative to the contract that you've signed and you've deployed it appropriately. Then there's also looking forward to thinking through, well, how may I deploy it, as we talked about earlier, when you start doing capacity upgrades. So let's move on to the next chart on success stories. And the first one that I'd like to talk about is of a global oil company where they have it and they're contracted for it, but they're not using it. And there are a couple examples in here where they were able to save some maintenance fees and so on, where they found that the software really wasn't being used. But they also found a situation where they were using a piece of software for a service station reports that could be done on another environment that's off of System Z or in a smaller LPAR or whatever. And they were able to basically either eliminate that software since it was relatively low usage of that piece of software, or they were able to put it on a relatively small logical partition and thereby license on a much more subcapacity basis and thereby save themselves significant amounts of money. So, but the key element here is really understanding the usage patterns. We all have extremely good controls in the SystemZ environment for installing and keeping track of making sure software is put out there properly, but we don't necessarily have a good, clear perspective over time of how that software has been used and necessarily how it's moved around in our SystemZ environment. So understanding usage patterns is a key element of being able to really keep finely tuned, so to speak, with your software deployments and that they make sense to your resource commitments. All right, let's move on to the next chart where we talk about a financial services company where they have something deployed, they're using it, but they found that they're not contracted for it. One of the things that many organizations have done is to absolutely make sure that you pull together in one key place all the software contracts and also abstract from those contracts the key licensing metrics and terms so that you compare against what's actually going out in your environment. As we talked about earlier, really understanding the intellectual property use rights and what, in essence, the licensing metrics are for that software and making sure you match that up with what's actually deployed and what's used really is the key process in order to make sure that you're in compliance with those licenses and proactively manage that. Or you can find, of course, things that you may have licensed for but actually aren't using. So let's move on to the next chart where we talk about organizations that have found that they have it, they use it, and they're contracted for it. And these are examples of organizations that have gone through and done things like setting up subcapacity agreements, putting things on smaller capacity servers that don't need to be deployed across the whole SystemZ environment. There are all sorts of ways of being able to control your costs by really understanding that, as I mentioned before, that usage patterns and also those licensing metrics. And when you understand that, put that together, then you can make effective deployment decisions that thereby help control those costs. So let's move on to the next chart here, which is talking about building a software asset management program. Now, the first phase, of course, is really to set the groundwork. You need to be able to really get the key sets of information. Without having this fundamental information together, you really are kind of dealing with making decisions on not based on fact, but more on what I think is going on. Now, that does not mean that you have to have 100% pure, accurate information. You know, nothing in life goes that way in order to be able to achieve benefits. You can, as you get to understand your inventory and usage patterns and your contract terms, you can start to take actions that make appropriate sense and achieve benefits for your organization. So it's very important to set that information foundation, information set, so you can do it, but it doesn't have to be 100% perfect for you to gain benefits. This is a journey, not an individual task. So software asset management, along with maintaining that information foundation, is an ongoing effort and needs continual work and effort in order to continue to have software asset management benefits. But it, clearly, if you don't start working on setting up that foundation of information, you will not be able to achieve those longer-term benefits of more mature software asset management programs. Then, once you've got that effort of building that information groundwork, prioritize your efforts. And that's really looking at products and contracts that are coming up for renewal. And clearly, you want to look at those that have more software value than those that are lower cost. So work through your calendar, think through what contracts are coming up for renewal, and focus your efforts to develop the information you need for that and be prepared for that contract renewal. Then the next level is once you've got your, you know, you're setting yourselves up appropriately for that, then to start working on looking for that low-hanging fruit that we talked about. This is on the next chart, phase three, where you basically want to go out and identify products that have no usage. Then there's the opportunity to go and look for products that have low usage. The example that we talked about a service station report, is an example of a departmental software that's used by an individual department that did not need to be deployed across the whole SystemZ environment. So that was a natural case where you can focus the use consumption or the capacity consumption of a particular departmental system and thereby save the organization funds. In the next phase, phase four, eliminate unnecessary products. You'll find in all organizations, particularly as we continue to consolidate, you know, workloads and so on, that there'll be a lot of products that you will have deployed in your SystemZ environment that have duplicate functionality. But there are no products, of course, that are 100% duplicate functionality, but a lot of cases that's very similar. And there was a great presentation given at SHARE, the Software Asset Management Conference, a few years back, where a company went through and explained the process that they went through to basically help consolidate down onto one or two products from a set of products that offered a similar set of functionality across their organization. And what they did is they went through the process of validating, set up an excellent process of getting organizational buy-in about each one of those products. So everybody had a chance to voice their opinions about various products. They were very transparent about the cost and the issues that related to each individual process so that everybody understood what the ultimate goal was. And they went through an effective process of pulling together the organization to reconcile, to come to a conclusion of really consolidating and eliminating unnecessary products. This is a project that could be fraught with danger for particular groups that have very strong loyalty to an individual product, but when it comes for the greater good of the organization and it's clearly communicated that way, this organization was able to achieve success in eliminating unnecessary products. Then we'll move on to the next chart where we talk about phase five, is eliminating multiple versions of products. There are a lot of cases where you'll find that certainly in embedded applications where you have embedded software tools and so on in applications that you may end up with a lot of older versions sitting in some of these applications. Understanding the usage patterns of these subsystems or subsoftware is essential to really understanding where you are and therefore helping in your migration path to eliminate multiple versions of products and thereby saving your organization some money and maintenance fees and effort and costs and support fees and things of that sort that are involved with maintaining multiple versions of products. And then the next phase of resolving discrepancies, that's really the process of going through and comparing their license contracts, license terms to which actually deployed out there. And that's an ongoing process because our organizations are always dynamic. New software is being deployed and we're signing new licenses and so on. So you want to set up an ongoing process of looking at your contract licensing terms versus what's deployed and used in order to make sure that everything is in sync. And then, you know, as we talked about earlier in some of the examples of what to do during various scenarios, you can take particular actions. And then finally, the phase seven on the next chart is, you know, set yourselves up for generating long-term savings. And one of the key points of doing that is to communicate to all the players that are involved with helping set up your software asset management process, and particularly more senior members of the management group, is to communicate your cost savings and your cost avoidance. When you eliminate a software product, for instance, it's not just a one-year cost. It's a multiple-year cost. So the savings that may show up in one budget year cycle is just one budget year. But when you think about it, it's a cumulative savings over many years. So it's very important to communicate, you know, for instance, you know, it's pulling a number out of the air of a $100 software product, you may save $100 in year one. But if you hadn't taken that action to do something about it and the licensing terms would have continued on for another 5 years, that's in essence a $600 savings to the organization over time. So that needs to be communicated effectively, and senior management and the rest of the organization have a clear understanding of the benefits of the software asset management program, and the actions that are taken today have big implications about resources that are available for other projects out into the future. Now let's move on to the next chart where we talk about how IBM really helps you provide this information foundation. We have a set of product offerings for both the System Z perspective and also in distributed environments to provide the essential information you need to do effective software asset management. And it starts off, you know, essentially answering the questions of what software do I have? In other words, going out and finding out the software inventory that's deployed out in your environments. And then really understanding the software use, which is equally important as understanding what's out there. Because by understanding what software use patterns are, you can take action. I, for instance, have had Microsoft Project installed on my PC for many years now, but I only used it about 3 years ago, and it's been dormant since. So if you just do an inventory, it would show that Microsoft Project is there, and therefore we need to license it. But if you understood the usage patterns, we could eliminate that software deployment and thereby save the organization some money. So understanding usage patterns is really important. And then the other element of it is understanding usage patterns from the perspective of what it means from a license point of view. So the licenses can either be a user license, a capacity license, it can be all sorts of different types of license metrics. So understanding software use from both active use of the consumers of that software and also what it means from a licensing perspective is extremely important. And we have two products that help in that area, the distributed side license compliance manager and on the Z environment, or the Z environment, typically license compliance manager for ZOS. Now, ultimately, what's important is to link this information to the license entitlements that we talked about earlier and to get to the key value propositions for your organization. And that's, in essence, am I over-licensed, which is a savings opportunity, or am I under-licensed, which is a compliance risk? And we talked about earlier about actions that can be taken once you understand whether you're over-licensed or under-licensed that can be advantageous to your organization. And then, of course, you need to link that information to the full contract and the financial information that goes with it and the whole life cycle of managing the software asset as it goes from the procurement phase all the way through the retirement phase. And we have an offering there called Tivoli Asset Management for IT, where all this inventory use and license information is integrated in to the fuller life cycle that involves multiple departments for a software asset management process. So what IBM does is we try to provide the information for you, that information foundation, for you to have an effective software asset management program. And if you look at the next chart, there's an example where we show the user interface where we highlight out where you're over or under licensed by particular software products or by particular platforms or whatever way you would like to drill down upon it. But that's an example of really getting to that point and providing the information to the point to see whether you're over licensed or under licensed so that you can take appropriate action. And then if you move on to the next chart is a chart about Tivoli Asset Management for IT, where I mentioned just before that there are multiple departments, multiple individuals that are involved with the life cycle of a software asset and also, of course, hardware assets. And the life cycle of each one of these assets really goes through a planning, acquiring, deployment, maintaining, and retirement phase. And we've been talking about when you're really looking at what's out there and comparing it to license terms and conditions is part of the maintain phase of software asset management. But there's the whole other phases of where you're actually planning and going forward where this information is useful, the acquiring phase where you've got the POs and all that kind of process, and then verifying that things are deployed properly, and then on the other side, the retirement to ensure that something is actually deinstalled and no longer being used and the contract terms are reflected appropriately. As you see by the whole set of bullets underneath each one of these phases, you can imagine the people inside your organization that are in various departments that are involved with each one of these phases of software asset management. And one of the great powers of the asset management for IT offering that we have is it's a very flexible user interface that you can design for the individuals who have responsibility for each phase of this process so that they can see the information, the work that they need to do, when they need to do it, and focus in on the tasks that they need to do in a timely manner. And as we talked about earlier, very much important part of effective software asset management is to bring together the various departments that are involved with software asset management and bring them together in a coordinated, well-orchestrated process. And Tivoli Asset Management for IT provides the tool set for you to be able to implement a process and manage it effectively. So if we move on to the next chart, kind of a governing philosophy that IBM has as far as to help you with asset management in software and also asset management in hardware, and in general about providing a service management approach to managing IT environments, is that we give you the visibility, control, and automation to be effective. And for software asset management, one of the things that we really strive to do is to provide you the visibility, really understanding your inventory, your usage patterns, linking that to contract and license entitlements. And then we help provide you the control by providing that visibility of that information, but providing you the control and the automation through Tivoli Asset Management for IT in order to be able to set up those processes, set them up appropriately, and then follow them through with an automated process that each person along the chain of events can do the work that they need to do in order to be effective. So that's our governing approach, and that's how we help in the area of software asset management, and particularly in software asset management on System Z. So on the next chart is links to our software asset management offerings. You can find out more information about these by clicking on these links, and there's specific examples in case studies and so on from customers that have worked with these products, and so that you can get a better understanding of what these offerings are all about. So anyway, I want to thank you for your time today. This session has really been intended to focus on helping software asset management on System Z and hopefully provide you some good information on how to address those issues. And what I'd like to do now is turn over the call to the operator so that we can proceed with the next steps during the call. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Now we'd like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live question and answer session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Question 1, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's conference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. And we'll pause for just a moment. Question 2, was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. And once again, we'll pause. Question 3, how important to your organization is effective software asset management on System Z? If it is high, press star 1. If it is medium, press star 2. If it is low, press star 3. And we'll pause one final time before our last question. In our final question today, we hope that you have enjoyed the teleconference. Please let us know if you're interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And that concludes our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone at this time. And once again, it is star 1, please. And as a final reminder, it is star 1, please. And Mr. Zelli, there are no questions at this time. I'll turn the conference back over to you for any additional or closing comments.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I hope this teleconference has been useful for you. It has been a high-level discussion of software asset management and the key issues and the processes and so on that help organizations have a successful software asset management on System Z. But usually what happens is that it's appropriate at a high level to set the stage, but as you as individuals have specific issues that you need to address in your environments, there are hundreds of detailed questions that get into how do I deal with an upgrade, how I can imagine this set of software, and specific vendor type questions, how does it relate to the terms that I have. And so what I'd like to offer is for additional places where you can gain more detailed information is first the software asset management track at the share organization that I mentioned at the top of the call. There are typically two share events twice a year. The next one is going to be in Austin in early March. We have a software asset management track at that share event, and we'll also have one in Denver coming up in August this year. And at that event, we'll have vendors and experts talking about software asset management on System Z and can get into respond to very specific questions that you'd have given your own specific environment. There is also, besides the share conference, you can also go into a chat room that is hosted that deals with a software asset management very specific issues. It is it's called ISV Costs, ISV COSTS. It's on IBM.com, and the way you get to it is IBM.com/software/solutions/ISV costs. That's a great site. It's a controlled access to customers can talk through the various issues that they have dealing with software asset management. So that's another good location for you to go to. And then finally, what you might also want to look more about what IBM has in its pricing policies and things about how to manage IBM software in the System Z environment. And on the IBM.com website, and the best, it's a fairly long string to get to that, but what I do to find it is that I put in the search field at the top of IBM.com, I put in SCRT tool, that's two words, SCRT space tool, and do a search on that, and then the first links that come up bring you to the area where there's all sorts of information about System Z pricing. And the reason I mentioned SCRT tool is that, of course, that's one of the tools that IBM offers to help manage subcapacity licensing in the System Z environment. So that's a great place to gather more sorts of information about it. So anyway, that's some overview type questions. I'll turn the call back to the operator in case some questions have to come up in the queue.
And there are no further questions at this time, ladies and gentlemen. We thank you for your participation. Have a great rest of your day.